Welcome to the Amy Rushworth Show. I'm your host, Amy. I'm so glad you're here. I'm an empowerment and sexual wellness coach, breathwork teacher, podcaster, course creator, badass bitch, and a globally recognized thought leader on empowerment. And I'm here to help you if you're ready to fuck off the rules and create a life of unashamed, unapologetic pleasure and deep, deep confidence. I have a burning passion for the taboo and naughty areas of womanhood that we're not supposed to talk about, such as sexual wellness, bold self-expression, defying social expectations, and so much more. The topics that we're typically taught to shut up about or be ashamed of are the conversations I live for, and those are the kind of juicy, soulful chats that are going down on this show. My intention is for you to step into your most outrageously free, unapologetically expressed version of you. So if that sounds like a vibe, let's fucking go. Are you ready? Hi, how are you?
Amy, good to see you.
Good to have you. Can you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. My name is Dominic Cortuccio. I am a speaker and author of two books. One is called Design Your Future. The other one's called On Purpose Leadership. They're both about how to design a life that you love living. And I run the Great Man Within podcast, which is a podcast for men who are interested in connecting to purpose, exploring their sexuality, their masculinity, honoring women. And I run masterminds for men who are interested in discovering the best version of themselves. And so I'm really excited, Amy, to be talking about whatever you've got in store for your audience of women who also bring their men along. Because actually, one of the things I want to say here is one of the number one ways that men find their way to doing inner work or listening to my show is through the women in their lives who turn them on to it. So I just want to say thank you to you and to you know, your women who are constantly like that pipeline for guys waking up.
Yeah, amazing. And I feel like this is going to be an episode that our listeners are going to pop on the speaker with their male partners or send it to them because it's going to be really insightful and really juicy. So how did you get into the work that you do now? Because I know that, like, similar to me, and many of us who are, you know, coaches, light workers, healers, like, we come from a dark past or from our own shadow, our own trauma. So I would love to hear your journey and initiation into this powerful work.
Yeah. I mean, I was just a mainstream dude for most of my life. I'm a 42-year-old man now. For 30 years, super mainstream guy, right? I grew up on sports and partying and then getting a job in financial services where I can make good money and be established and climb the ranks in the professional space, have social standing, like that. Those were all the things. And, you know, had a good group of guy friends that I carried since like my childhood that, you know, we didn't really talk about anything deep, but we were always there for each other. And for 30 years, that kind of worked until it didn't. And I remember when I was 30 years old, this was 2009, I had the best year of my financial career. I tripled my sales goal that year, made kind of like life-changing money, hit some milestones professionally that I thought would take decades longer to hit. And when that happened, I just kind of looked around at my life and I was like, ah, I thought this would feel a lot better. You know, I'm like, I was proud of myself, but then I was like, huh, I thought this would feel better. And then if this is as good as it gets, holy shit, what does that mean for the next 30 or 40 years of my life? And I remember, like, for the first time in my life, losing sleep, actually, like, literally losing sleep over that question, not knowing who the hell to talk to about any of that stuff. Couldn't bring that to friends. And that kind of set off like a little bit of curiosity around what are these, like, what's this thing of inner work, like personal development. And I started reading books by Tim Ferriss, The 4-Hour Work Week, David Dada's The Way of the Superior Man, which was really about like learning how to be a leader and masculinity and purpose and how to interact with women differently. That started to wake me up. And the real big wake up call came 3 years later in 2013, where I bottomed out and I entered Sex Addicts Anonymous for a period of 4 years in my life, which if anyone had known, would have shocked the hell out of them, because on the surface, I appeared as this like meticulously put together, says all the right things, does all the right things, a leader that we can trust, a guy of integrity. Yet in my private life, I had this like this dark sexual relationship with my sexuality that I went to anytime I was bored, alone, frustrated, stressed out, overwhelmed, and like most men, never learned how to navigate my emotions. So the way that I dealt with my emotions was by numbing them out in my sexuality. And for some guys, it's, you know, they're workaholics or alcoholics, or they, you know, they gamble or they party too much. For me, that was the duct tape and the glue that held my life together until it didn't. And so that was my first steps on the inner journey that led to what I do today.
Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. There's so many threads that I want to pull on here. So I'm going to start with something you actually posted about today, which was very moving. And I'm very thankful that you're a voice for this in the world. You did this post of yourself crying, this video of yourself crying, and you were sharing that you went decades without being able to cry. And I know for the men in my life, even for my husband, like when I first met him, it was so just not accessible for him. Like, he is so beautiful and had such a big heart, but it was like, nope, can't cry, can't go there, can't feel the depths of those kinds of feelings. And I think so many women and probably female listeners of this show have this desire to have their partners be more emotional, to be more emotionally available and open. But it's so hard for so many men. So I would love to hear your thoughts and your personal experiences as well on why is it so hard for men to express certain emotions? And then, like, secondary to that, how do we start to create safety around that for the men in our lives?
That's such a beautiful question. So thank you for that, Amy. For the man who's listening, who's like, you just posted yourself crying on Instagram. What the fuck? Like, trust me, I was you. Like, I get that. Right. And it was a real edge for me to post that video. Because I do know that one of the knocks on men's work is like this perception of just dudes crying on each other's shoulders, wearing flannel, growing beards, like doing elephant walks in the woods together. Like, and that's one of the reasons why so many guys like don't ever, but the reason why I felt it so important to show that it was because I know that the guy that I was maybe 10 years ago, or even 7 years ago, 5 years ago, had this desire to just feel, like to feel something that actually felt true, that felt deep. And there were so many years of my life where like I just started to wish to feel pain so I could feel anything at all. And Amy, to get to your question about like why is it so hard for men to access these emotions? Well, from a very early age, many men, boys, are socialized into believing that emotions are weakness. Emotions are a liability. Or if we want to get really real here, you're a pussy if you cry, or if you show insecurity, or if you show self-doubt. And, you know, really early on, you're basically like standing on this house of cards of whether or not you're a man. And that house of cards is built upon, can you be aggressive? Can you be dominant? Can you be certain? Can you be a leader? Can you be a player? And all those things are kind of like moment by moment actions that, like, if you don't do them, you can have your man card stripped, the house of cards falls, and all of a sudden, like, you're on the outs. You know, every guy knows what it feels like to not finish his beer and his buddies make fun of him and no longer has his man card, or to strike out with somebody, you know, or to back down from a physical altercation and you're a pussy, you're not a man, or to have your sexuality questioned. And so what do we do? I mean, we build up this inner armor to not feel that shit because it hurts to feel that shit. So you walk around and you narrow these range of emotions because emotions are unsafe to feel. If you get too high, If you get too low, it's not safe. So you stuff it down, compartmentalize. You do that for enough years of your life or decades of your life. And then all of a sudden you're just kind of like this robot. And what I see a lot of guys do is they overdevelop their brains, become really smart, become really intellectual, think a lot, calculate, think things through. And it's fucking exhausting. All you do is spend your entire life walking around in your head, feeling. You don't know what you feel. You certainly can't feel what your partner feels. She feels disconnected from you, wants that. So that's an experience that I just described that I think a lot of men can relate to in their lives. And that's why guys turn to things like sexuality or gambling or extreme sports, because those are those like fringes, those extremes in our lives where we can actually feel shit again, because everything feels so gray and we're craving these technicolor experiences.
Thank you so much for sharing that. Because I think, you know, as women, we talk about our emotions typically more openly with each other than perhaps men do. And as women, we're up against so many different pressures in society from very early on, you know, let alone just trying to be safe in the world, but also, you know, about our bodies and, you know, being everything. And now we have this idea of like the superwoman archetype. But I guess a lot of us don't stop and think, like, why are men like that? What are the pressures that have been on them since they were young? And, you know, like, it's easy to look, I guess, at a man who's emotionally shut down and doesn't want to talk about it as like, oh, you're just cold and you don't understand me. But it's like, how do we ask more questions about why that is? Because little boys are so sweet. Like, if you ever like hang out with really like young boys, they're always so cute and so loving and so open, and they'll wear dresses sometimes, and you know, they're really sweet. And so I'm always fascinated as to, you know, how we become the way that we are. And I think that sometimes as women, we don't think about, you know, what do men need? What do men desire? What do men need to feel safe to open up? We just demand, need more. And it's really helpful to hear you talk about that from the male and the masculine perspective. Now, the next thing that I have seen you post about that I love is this idea of breaking down the man box. So you wrote this great post and you were like, maybe a man is super dominant in the boardroom and then submissive in the bedroom, or maybe a man is physically strong but really tapped into the poetry of his heart. And so I love this idea because I'm all about like, people are so multifaceted and humans love to try and shove themselves into these boxes that are not empowering. So I would love to hear, how can men embrace this more multifaceted, reality that you're talking about when it comes to masculinity and manhood?
Great, I love it. So the man box is actually a concept that was coined by the Oakland Men's Project, I think back in the 1980s or 1990s. And this box is basically, if you think about like a cardboard box, and the walls of the box are defined by what it means to be a man. And it's a very narrow, traditionally masculine set of parameters, like you must be dominant. You must not show emotion. You must be a leader. You must be straight sexually. You must be dominant, especially with women. You know, all these things. And then if you abide by those box, if you get to stay in the box, then you get to retain your man card. You know, you get to be a man, even being like athletic, you know, these kinds of things. And I love your example of like little boys, before they learn about this box, like there aren't any definitions. They just are who they are. But then they get taught at a very early age that if you want to be a man, and you want to belong to this group, and if you want to have safekeeping, then you have to stay in this box. There are a very small set of men who actually just naturally fit into those parameters just by their being. The rest of us have to assimilate and shave off parts of who we are to actually fit in that. And then we lose a part of ourselves over life. And, you know, like for any guy who's been a part of a fraternity or like a sports team, you know, I was always a part of sports growing up, love my sports relationship, my sporting life. But there was a certain way of you had to be on the team. And then I was a fraternity at college, and there was a certain way that you had to be in that fraternity, and anything else wasn't accepted or appreciated. So masculinity gets this very, very narrow definition. And what I try to do in those posts where I do these contrasts of, hey, you can headbang to Metallica, but also shed a tear to Adele, you know, like you can be dominant in the boardroom and you can be submissive in the bedroom. It's to show that like we as men are much more complex than we've been portrayed in media and movies and television. You know, like you kind of see these oftentimes like hyper masculine characterizations of, like you see a Tony Soprano, you know, like, and Tony Soprano is just like this mob boss who's constantly philandering on his wife and goes to therapy, which is groundbreaking, but like never learns anything, doesn't get any better, you know, out of touch with his emotions, is violent. And it's like we just kind of see these like these rigid characterizations of men over and over and over again. And in the men that are in my life who are emerging in these communities that I run, who listen to the podcast, who are part of the Facebook group that I run, these guys are what would be considered paradoxes because they don't fit any traditional mold. You know, like they can be like someone who likes firing guns and throwing axes, and they also write poetry, you know. It's confounding to people, but not to me, because I've seen enough men who are like, who've got that range. And I can assure you, Amy, there's like someone listening to your show right now who maybe has a love. Oh, here's a great question. Here was something awesome that happened the other day on Facebook, in my Facebook group. It's called the Great Man Within Facebook group. So any guy who's listening, come search the Great Man Within Facebook group. I posted a picture of myself coming back from the gym, and I said, hey, is there a song that you love to listen to that if any of like the guys in your life knew you listened to it, they would bust your balls for? I'll go first. And I put this song, it was like by Wilson Phillips. I think it was called, I forget the name of the song, but it was from Harold and Kumar's like White Castle Adventure. And I was like, I love this song, you go. And then 30 men just went in, and it was like Celine Dion and Madonna and Katy Perry. And these are like super masculine dudes who have like this closet, like love for these songs, but we can't openly admit it because it's not going to make us a man. Like, yeah. Let's cut the fucking bullshit around that, and let's allow ourselves to be who we are, to openly express it without constantly worrying about if we're going to have our sexuality or masculinity questioned around it.
Yeah. Amazing. That's amazing. So amazing to hear that. And the other piece that you shared earlier that I really want to dive into with you is, and you've been posting about it recently as well, as like this idea of men's sexuality and how it's not portrayed in a very positive way. It's portrayed in this very like pathological way, where whenever men's sexuality is spoken about or highlighted in the media or it's up for discussion, it's like, because it's problematic, because it's shallow, it's in a song that's disrespectful to women, or it's predatory, you know, with, you know, men creating, you know, harm to women. And I totally get why so many of us women are feeling that way. I felt that way. I have felt unsafe more times than I could even possibly count. And so many other women have felt unsafe at the hands of men, or even just, you know, living and existing inside of a patriarchal, often harmful society and world. However, what I also desire is to create a world outside of that paradigm, outside of that lived experience, to create the possibility that men can be seen as these beautifully divine sexual beings, just as we desire that for ourselves as women in many ways as well. So men are obviously sexual beings who desire sexual empowerment, who desire to have a healthy relationship, I'm sure, with sex, which is sacred. So how do we begin creating a healthier dimension for men's sexuality? And I specifically want to orient this towards women, because right now, and rightly so, there's been a lot of things lately that have caused a lot of women to feel unsafe, sure, that have sparked this conversation around violence against women. You know, lots of our listeners are in the UK, and I'm not sure if you saw, but, you know, a woman was abducted, yes, and murdered. Yes. And so I want us to dive into this in a way where we can be mindful of that, but also celebrate the amazing men on this planet who desire to have sexual empowerment just like we do.
Yeah. I first want to give credit where credit's due. So Esther Perel, who's like, you know, one of the greatest leaders and therapists around healthy sexuality and intimacy and relationships, she ran a conference in 2018 called The Masculinity Paradox. She brought together some of the greatest leaders of therapists who work with men and men's sexuality. And they were the ones who brought up this concept that men's sexuality, when we hear about it, it's through a pathological lens. And one of the therapists that I really resonated with, his name is Dr. David Lay. And yes, his last name is Lay, and he's a sex therapist from that. And he makes that joke before you do, because he's heard it a million times. He's like, you know, think about how, like, whose sexuality do we hear about? Like, we know a lot more about, say, a Donald Trump sexuality than we do a Barack Obama's. And we know a lot more about a Tiger Woods' sexuality, who, you know, when he crashed his car after cheating on his wife with a number of escorts, like, we hear a lot about that. We hear a lot about the pickup artists of the world. We hear a lot about the players and the fuckboys. And we also see a lot of porn stars. Like, why? Well, because the rest of male sexuality is like, we don't really care about it. We don't talk about it. So as men, like, we're always looking for, who do we learn from? You know, like, who are our role models? Well, we go to what's the most available. And what's the most available are the porn stars, the players, the pickup artists, and then the pathological people who we get to hear about in the news when they've either sexually abused. One of the guys here, like in the NFL football world, Deshaun Watson was like a star in the football field. And he had had a sterling reputation for years. And now there's a class action lawsuit of 19 different massage therapists, because of how he's sexually assaulted them in various ways. And so we hear about these things, but we very rarely hear about who are the men who are doing it well. And, you know, like to frame this also, to bring in the context of what you wanted to bring in here, Amy, is like, you know, the women and how there's a total lack of safety that is being experienced and felt out there, because there are a lot of men who are either predatory or unhealthy in their sexual relationships. But let's maybe look at like how most men have learned about their sexuality in the first place. So a few years ago, I polled 50 men in my circles, asking them about the first time they ever masturbated. And it was kind of amusing, because it's like, why do you want to know about the first time I ever masturbated, right? And it's like, well, you know, how did you learn about sexuality? And, you know, that's like a rite of passage. The first time you masturbate is a rite of passage into your own sexual pleasure. And I wanted to know, how old were you? So 80% of these guys were between the ages of 11 and 14 when they masturbated. Think how young that is. Like, have you been around an 11-year-old lately? That's young.
Yeah.
And none of these guys, none of them knew what the hell they were doing. They all either stumbled upon it by themselves, or had like an older sibling or a friend kind of teach them how to do it. Like, not the kind of high caliber training that you would want. Mm-hmm. Some of them were sexually abused their first time learning how to masturbate. And I asked them to give me three words to describe that very first experience. And the first word was usually something like, wow, awesome, amazing, explosive. What? You know, it was like this description of how they felt. And it was something usually like really positive. But when they got to the third word to describe that experience, this is where the judgment of that came in. And the words like shame, wrong, bad, guilt started to pop up. So there was this disconnect, like a gap between, wow, this feels amazing, but I'm bad for doing it. Wow, this feels amazing, but it's against my religion. Wow, this is amazing, but I'm a pervert for having done this. Now that happens. And this ambivalence around one of the most potent sexual, most potent forces that any of us have experienced in our lives is now conflated. That's imprinted on our life experience. Then we have to go years of, like, say, masturbating in quiet in your home because you can't let your parents know, your siblings can't know. So you're jerking off in secrecy and quiet as fast as you possibly can, and you're stealing glimpses at pornography or whatever. So the kid's on his own. He's thinking it's bad, it's wrong. He's doing it as quickly as possible. He's learning from sources like pornography that's showing us a very warped view of, like, what sexuality is. He's comparing himself to these porn stars in his own body. And it's happening in secrecy while building this ambivalence. So this is, I'm describing for you, not every man's sexual learning experience, but a damn good portion of our population's experience: secrecy, shame, and a lack of education and knowledge. So what do we expect when men are now interacting with another human being for the first time? To take a girl, like if you're talking about younger kids, or a woman's, to take that awareness of, like, her humanity and her insecurities and her desires when we don't even know how to articulate ours and we're just mimicking what we're seeing out there, it's a recipe for disaster. And I'm not saying that that women who are listening to this, especially ones who have been abused or have been threatened, are responsible for educating their man, right? It's like, it's not on your shoulders, it's on ours to wake up. But if you can kind of see the historical evolution of how so many of us get to where we are through a different lens, there's maybe like a different level of compassion and patience when we show up the way that we do sometimes.
Yeah, I really understand that as well. I mean, I've been raped, I've been abused, but I just have this mindset of, like, I can be angry about that and just say, fuck all men, like, fuck all of you. I don't care why you became that way. But I just feel like that doesn't create a solution for the next generation of women that might have to go through what I've been through. So that's why I think it's good to ask these questions, to dive deeper, to try and think about, you know, where does the problem originate? And how can we create more love and empowerment in young boys, especially, so that these beautiful little boys don't grow up and create harm or cause harm unintentionally, or are misogynistic and not even really even aware of it, maybe. So thank you so much for sharing all of that. It's really cool to hear it from a different perspective, because it's very easy, you know, to get up with your girlfriends and talk about all of these shared experiences and problems and all of the things that are wrong with the world and with sex and with men. But it's really beautiful to hear it from your perspective as a man. So the next thing that I want to dive into, which I'm really excited that you talk about this, is you talk about honoring women during their cycle. I saw you post about this of, like, I can't remember how you said it. It was like, woman on your cycle, like, I see you, girl, or something like that. And that's so refreshing to me, because, like, I've kind of trained my husband to be like that. And so now when I'm on my moon, he's like, oh, it's sacred. Like, baby, just do what you need to do. But obviously when I first met him, he was like everyone else, pretty much. He was like, oh, women go crazy on their periods, or like, I don't really get you. Why are you yelling at me? You know, why are you having all of these emotional ups and downs? So it would be really cool to hear your take on this as a man, like, being on the receiving end of receiving, you know, a partner, or honoring women in their cyclical nature, and perhaps really empowering for the women listening to hear that reverence from a man.
I have deep reverence, and I'll tell you who some of my teachers were here. And let's start with going back to where most men or boys learn about the cycle and, like, how it's positioned and framed. It's positioned as, it's a woman's issue. It's nothing for you to know about. It's an inconvenience and a barrier to you having sex. And women go crazy. And then you hear these, right? Like, and then that's how it's talked about. And then you hear some of the more off color jokes, like don't trust anything that bleeds every 28 days and doesn't die. Like that's the kind of shit that most guys grow up with. So when, you know, when it shows up in relationship, then guys will be like, they'll go back and they'll bitch to their friends about like, oh God, here she's going, I can't have sex. And then that perpetuates. So what was amazing was the podcast that I run, it's called The Great Man Within Podcast. One of our pillars is honoring women. And we brought so many beautiful women on our show to teach us about their gifts. I had the extraordinary pleasure of bringing on two women who have dedicated, I think, 30 or 40 years of their collective lives teaching women how to live by the power of their menstrual cycle. And their names are Shawnee Hugo Wurlitzer and Alexandra Pope. They run The Red School. They've written Wild Power, which is a book that was published by Hay House. I think it's about unleashing the power of your menstrual cycle. And this was a real edge for us. Like when we brought this on the podcast, we're like, I think Brian, my podcast partner, was like, Dom, I'm a yes to this, but like, have we kind of jumped the shark on, like, do we go too far, you know, with our male audience? Long story short, it's the number one most downloaded episode out of 220 episodes and by a long shot. It actually is like our second most downloaded episode has half as many downloads.
Wow.
Like that episode caught fire. And what we had learned in listening to Shawnee and Alexandra, they broke down for us that like the cycle is this incredible initiation, right? Every 28 days for a woman who's still in her menstrual cycle years. And there are these four seasons to the cycle. And for guys, we love kind of knowing processes and like an understanding, okay, here's what happens in day 0 through 7. And obviously it's different for all women, but at least it gives you a structure and a framework. And when she's in winter phase, which is where the first bleed happens, she's very introspective. You know, she wants to disconnect from the outside world. And in each of the seasons of the cycle, they told us, here's what she may want from you as the man. And I remember Shawnee saying, like, when I'm in my winter phase, I want my man to protect me from the outside world. Like the claims on my time, I want him to say no. Like she's in connecting with herself, tapping into her intuition, surrendering to whatever cramps or lack of energy that she may be feeling, right? Like thinking deeply about some emotional stuff. And that he's like that first line of defense. He gets to be the warrior standing at the guard for her because that's what she needs. He feels powerful. He learns how to like step up into that, because then when spring rolls around and now her energy is more vibrant and she's feeling more externally oriented and now she's sexually much more open and spontaneous and curious. And they would say, this is the time like where if you want to try something, you know, exploratory in your sex life, this is the time to, you know, to put that in there. Summer, she's superwoman, you know, and then she's ovulating, she's going. And so when they broke down the seasons of the cycle, and then autumn is the time, which is typically, you know, associated with PMS and, you know, things are changing and there could be a bite to her, you know, like she's not as, she could be more rough around the edges, more direct, mm-hmm. not caring as much about your feelings, and then recognizing that that's where she is. And she's also at the height of her inner critic. So she's harder on herself. It just illuminated this, like this beautiful process that for me was like, holy shit, you're walking around with like a superpower. And, and I think like the, you know, like the ICU post that I did was like, hey, listen, to, you know, to the women out there who are living in honor of their menstrual cycle in a world that disregards it. I see you, right? Because it is something that now when I'm dating someone and she didn't know about the wild power. Like we read the book together. I bought the 6-week course for her as a birthday gift. She went through it and she's just like, oh my God, my mind is blown. Like when I'm in autumn, that's why I could be so rough with you sometimes, Dominic, and I'm sorry. And you know, this and that. So she's revolutionized her life and reoriented her business, but also our relationship around her seasons. And it feels really good for us to be able to communicate on that level. So I have massive deference to that process, to the cycle, how it's different for every woman, how it's different for women who are in menopause or, you know, in going through postmenopausal. And yeah, the mystery of women is just like, it's, I'm jealous, man. Like you all have some like really big superpowers that, that can be across to bear in a world that doesn't appreciate, but when like you find that power and you find that space and you find a community of others who like really understand it, fuck, you all have some massive strength.
Yeah, totally. I mean, like you said, a lot of women don't even know that about themselves and their own menstrual cycle, but it's so sacred to be able to have like your man hold space for that, because the world definitely doesn't hold space for that. Like most medical offices you'll walk in, they'll usually just tell you, oh, your period doesn't even matter. You can just skip it, you know, on the contraceptive pill. Or, you know, so many women that follow me have had horrific experiences with menstrual pain and having to go to work and just push through, and like they're crying in the cubicle and bleeding and then walking into the boardroom. And you know, I desire a world, as I'm sure you do, where the mystical powers of the bleed are celebrated once more.
Well, I mean, one of the things that they recommend in the book is this concept of bleed on it. So if you don't know what the answer is to some, say, relationship issue or some next step about self-love or like the path in your career, like they recommend, go have a bleed on it. And, you know, like I think in some Native American populations, they have these bleeding lodges, right? Where women will come together and bleed together and talk about like, what does the community need? And the men in those communities will actually defer to the women and say like, what is your vision? What do you see? And then trust in that. And for me, like I've done that with the women in my life who I'm in business relationships with, who have opened up around their cycles with me, will sometimes tell me, it's like, hey, I've got a strong intuitive hit on this. And I'm like, good, let's go with it. Like I, you know, it's faster. I trust it more. And it's also more fun. And I don't need to rely on that. So yeah, let's go with it. And I think to a lot of, you know, I remember I spent 15 years in financial services, like the idea of that way of thinking, you know, people would like, you know, put you out the pasture, but I've seen it work. And I do think there's an opportunity at least to start this conversation in more traditional settings around, hey, like why should Amy have to push through and go to this boardroom when there might be a better way of allowing her to surrender to like her natural energies? We could benefit from you showing up the best version of yourself, like on your time, on your schedule, and learn how to like dance with those energies more effectively.
Yeah, totally. I mean, a lot of the time the actual attitude is feeding into the menstrual pain anyway, because it's like our bodies aren't designed to just be like working like slaves every single week in the cycle. Like we need to lay down, we need to be in nature, we need to bleed. Like, and you know, I encourage anyone listening, like who doesn't open up to their partner about this, or maybe you're a man listening and you've never really spoken to your partner about it, start to bring it into the conversation. Like you're making love and exchanging liquids anyway. So like, you know, it's sacred and it's intimate. You touched on something earlier around how like sometimes men are drawn to really dangerous things, like extreme sports, risky hobbies, like living on the edge, really pushing the edge. And I know like in a way, sometimes that's like more of a masculine trait of like wanting to kind of like push, but I know that as you learn to unblock your emotions more and more, like you experience, I guess, more of a balance with that. So I would love to hear more about that journey of finding balance with like, how far is too far to push the envelope, and when is it coming from wounding, and when is it coming from just like a masculine desire to achieve, to push, to, you know, go to more of the extreme?
Yeah, it's great. So I found that like in this search to feel a sense of aliveness on the inside, and this goes back to like, we've been trained to stuff down our emotions, to not feel. And over time, we just want to feel that fire again. We want to feel that aliveness because we know what it felt like as a kid. You know what I mean? Like we were excited. We had that. I'm trying to find like a holiday that makes this like, you know, inclusively responsible, but it's kind of like that kid at Christmas type of excitement or a kid at birthday type of excitement, like where you just get, you can't even sleep because that's something on your horizon. And then over time that just gets kind of like beaten out of you or stuffed down, the fire stops burning. So what I see men go do is like, you know, go to these extremes to feel themselves again. And with my sex addiction, you know, my extremes would be say like flying across the country for just some, for some sexual escapade with someone I didn't even really like think highly of, you know, just to feel that aliveness and to get on the plane and to know I'm doing something that no one knows about. And what if I get caught? And other guys like extreme athletes, extreme sports. I've written a number of books on extreme athletes where so many of them end up dying because they don't feel alive unless they are in that extreme situation where, you know, they're climbing up a mountain 1,000 feet above the ground without, you know, without any safety gear. And they end up killing themselves just for that fear. Cause when they're in their regular life, it feels so dull, drab, and mundane. And for a lot of guys, it could either just be like, you know, work or maybe drinking too much, whatever your extreme is, it's usually because you're missing some sort of feeling on the inside on a regular basis that you wish to feel, a sense of aliveness, a sense of purpose, a sense of meaning, a sense of fire. And what I have found is when a man can turn inward and recognize that like that stuff doesn't exist outside of him, it's really like this inner state of being where if you can explore your own emotions, explore the edge of what grief feels like, explore the edge of what fucking anger feels like. You know, like every day you're pissed off, whether it's someone cuts you off, you know, someone cuts you off on the road or someone criticizes you or that person that just like, you know, just rubs you the wrong way. Like you feel that anger all the time, but it comes up and you suck it back down. You don't give it its course. There's an edge there that if you can learn how to explore that and fully feel that, there's life there. Mm-hmm. And then you don't have to put yourself in harm's way. It's readily available moment by moment by moment. And the only way that stuff gets explored is like by doing work with other men and coaching. You can't read about it. You can't like, I mean, you can maybe self-train it, but it's going to take you long. You have to do that work with other men in other scenarios. But that is where depth is built. That is where purpose and meaning is found. That is where like the women in your life, if you were a man who's heterosexual, like they start to like say, woof, who are you now? Like you're tapped in. I was with a client last night, 50-year-old man who signed up for a year's worth of inner work with me. We put him through a really intense 30-hour immersion, 3 guys working on one, him, like big, big cracking open. He said he showed more emotion in those 30 hours than he had in the last 50 years of his life. And like truly understand that. And he shared with me last night that his wife of 25 years, who also knew him in high school, she was like, you are a different man right now. Like the depth of conversations that we've been having, I've craved for decades. Who are you? Like what is in there? I thought I knew what was in there, but I'm realizing I have no idea what's in there because he's now revealing. And so she's more fascinated by him than she ever has been. And he's just scratching the fucking surface. He's not anywhere near like the center of his orbit. So as he gets more and more enamored with his own potential and self, so is she. And I can tell you that how that story ends. His sex life is going to go crazy. She's going to be more magnetized to him. They're going to be able to go places that he never thought possible. She's going to start opening up parts of herself that he never knew was possible. And so he gets to explore the things of her that he never knew. So yeah, I'll stop.
That's it. Yeah. As you were speaking, something that I was thinking about is like, in your view, how important do you think it is for a man to be held in a space with perhaps not only just you as another man, but you mentioned the group work and the importance of that, because I know like statistically women rely on their girlfriends for more emotional support, whereas men actually predominantly rely on their wives or girlfriends.
Yes.
And so it feels like there's a different frequency there being held in a group of men, like the vulnerability of that and like the being seen aspect of that as well.
Yeah, 100%. Launched a mastermind last year, 20 men got together for 12-month group. And these guys are, I'm talking like men in their 40s and 50s who, 30s, 40s and 50s who are like of the most successful people that I know. And their experience is, they never knew what it was like to be around a group of guys where their emotions were safe.
Yeah.
Like they would rely exclusively on the women in their lives to go to open up emotionally, because their experience of being around other men was always like there's some form, whether it was like, even if it was small and most times big, that there was competition. And I grew up in very competitive environments my whole life, like sports, fraternity, sales environments, and financial services. The first place that I ever entered where was a group of men where there was no competition was when I entered Sex Addicts Anonymous. And I went to a 12-step meeting. And for the first time, I'm surrounded by a group of 20, 30 guys who weren't competing with me. And it didn't compute with me, because I actually went in just kind of sizing every guy up, running my old program. It's like, okay, who's the alpha dog in here? Who's the guys that are the beta guys? Who's the guy that I should be threatened by? Where's the guys that I can dominate? And it's like this calculation on autopilot that I didn't even recognize, but it was just every group of guys I walked into, and always the guard was up. And it took months of my sponsor, like the guy who kind of my mentor in the group, who just kind of had to wake me up and say, dude, these guys aren't competing with you. They're trying to relate to you. You know, this isn't like any other form that you've been to. And eventually when I was able to open up and start to share openly and honestly, I was like, I had no idea how unsafe I felt in other, I never would have used that word. I didn't realize how armored up I was in every other environment, how little I trusted other men. Cause I knew what it was like to have my balls busted or to be made fun of, or to be, you know, to be teased or, so I avoided all those topics. And over time, I just learned how to shut that down. So it took me like, you know, years to learn how to create environments where other men could open up about the parts of themselves that they never had before. And it needs to happen, Amy, as you said, in groups. Like it's great to feel it one-on-one with another guy. There's something transcendent that happens when there's a group of three, four guys. This group of 20 guys that I have together, just like witnessing, like what we've seen over this last year, Amy, will blow your fucking mind. Guys who have had 3-decade-long chronic drug use, broken. Guys who have had eating disorders for their entire lives, broken, you know, like just like, and this was like where they get to rewrite the narratives of their life because they opened up, they showed their ugly bits. They went into the darkness and the other guys loved on them more. Cause like what we celebrate, most guys are only used to being parts of environments where their success is celebrated and their weaknesses are like, are mocked or tried to be avoided. In our group, we celebrate your successes, but we actually celebrate more when you open up about the real shit.
Yeah.
And when you let us into your heart and we celebrate that, then it gives guys permission to be like, well, okay, here's what I'm fucking dealing with. And when an entire group of guys are doing that, holy shit, you should see the strength of these men, the power, the ability to take risks. It's been unlike anything I've seen before. So we're like doing that and now like replicating that model for the future groups of men that we open up to.
It's amazing. It's so interesting to hear you say as well, because it feels like it's almost like the same thing, but the inverse for women, in that, like, you know, you mentioned that men are celebrated typically for their success, but they hide their weakness. Whereas like for women, it's like, don't shine too bright, because otherwise other women will tear you down. So it's like, be weak, like talk about, you know, how you're not good enough. Like, you know, say things about yourself as a joke. Like, don't, you know, don't ever think you're too good, you know, and people get triggered by me all the time, because I'm always like celebrating myself and I'm like, I'm amazing, you know, it's really hard for women to like, lean into that. And it feels the same, like almost the same thing, but the inverse of it with men, of like these brother wounds as opposed to sister wounds. And I agree. Like the group work is always so potent. It's just like this different level of vulnerability and empowerment.
It needs to have, and so many of these guys are like, they're the only one in their group of friends who's like thinking this way, or like, you know, asking these deeper questions, and they feel alone, and they're kind of like, and they have no idea what it's like to be supported. And then they come to a group and they're like, holy shit, finally. And that confidence, the ability to take risks, that fire and passion they start to feel on a daily basis. And it, like, you can see there's this moment in time, Amy, this moment, it's subtle, but I can see when the light bulb goes off and in the guy's eyes, where he starts to recognize for the first time how capable he's truly, like what he's truly capable of, where he wakes up to this. And the reason why our podcast is called The Great Man Within is this belief that like you have two lives, like you have this life that you live, but there's this unlived life inside of you. And that's that great man. And he's been stuffed down. He's been boxed away. He's been caged up. And I can see that light bulb go off. And as soon as that happens, his second life has been born. And now he's kind of like on this journey for the rest of his life, trying to like to fully embody who is that great man, that fully potentialed king inside of me. And he becomes a really exciting dude to be around when he's on that path.
Amazing. I want that for every man and every little boy as well on the planet. So for someone who's like totally new to this, I know when you first come across this world, it can be kind of like overwhelming. You're like, holy shit, like these people are so intimidating. Where do I start? Would you say they should come to your podcast, or is there like other avenues they could take to start like diving in, or books they could read? Where do they start?
I love that. The I think it's the very first or second episode of our podcast is called, so the podcast is called The Great Man Within. Yeah. And the very first episode I think is called The Number One Enemy to Living a Powerful Life. Start there. It's broken down for the person who's just like just waking up to this. And the number one enemy to living a powerful life, the complement to that, if like, you know, you listen to that, it's going to be like a 50 minute investment of your time. If that wakes you up, the greatest book of my life is called Outwitting the Devil by Napoleon Hill. And I've read like 300 books in my life over the last like 10 years. This is by far the number one most important book of my life. I make every guy in our work read that. It is profound, life-changing, practical, spiritual, and like, you'll be spoken to. And then I would say like, if here's one of the things that guys do. Guys lone wolf everything. You know, when they wake up to this, they'll spend years reading books, listening to podcasts, consuming information on their own, doing these challenges by themselves. Personal development on your own is slow. It's shallow. It's incomplete. Stop just consuming info on your own and come in and like join our Facebook group. You know, we've got 530, something like that, men who are in there sharing their stories, book lists, podcasts, doing challenges together. And that's the Great Man Within Facebook group. Great community of guys that are there for accountability conversations. So I would say those are like the first steps that I would take, Amy, if you're new to the path.
Amazing. You're amazing. I'm so glad you exist. And thank you so much for sharing all of this amazing wisdom today. Where should everyone come and find you? On Instagram, somewhere else?
Yeah. I mean, I'd love for anyone to listen to the podcast. Half our listeners are women because, you know, you just want to be a fly on the wall. Like so many women want to be a fly on the wall for like, what are men who are doing the inner work talking about? Yeah. So the Great Man Within podcast is great. Instagram is where I post a lot of my like deepest, rawest, like what's going on. I basically say it's the behind the scenes look of men's work. And so it's behind the scenes of what's going on in my life. It's raw. And it's also what men are doing. So my Instagram account is @DominicQ, and then come into the community in Facebook, which is a men's only Facebook community, the Great Man Within Facebook group.
Amazing. Thank you so much. So appreciate you.
Amy, thank you. These were beautiful questions. You dove in like some of the top, like best topics. I really appreciate your intentionality and the thoughtfulness in the interview.
Amazing. Thank you so much for tuning in. I hope this episode ignited you, expanded you, and enriched your heart, your mind, your life in some way. If it did, reach out on Instagram. My handle is This Is Amy Rushworth, or you can head over to my website for all my courses, retreats, and magical offerings at amyrushworth.com. If the show feels like a vibe for you, make sure you subscribe. And if you have 60 seconds to rate and review, or even to just share the show with a friend, I would be so, so, so grateful. And it helps more amazing, beautiful people like you to discover this show and to improve their lives for the better. Stay tuned for the next episode. And until then, I'm sending you strength, grace, ferocious courage, and a friendly reminder to always love yourself fiercely and to go out there and live your most unapologetic life.